Hello and welcome to the Albion Raw Christmas special here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are coming down your chimney and raiding your fridge with the help of Phil Shelley's magnificent oldfootballshirts.com. Well, last Saturday saw us add another point to the total, but most will see it as 2 points dropped after Glenn Murray missed a penalty in our 0-0 draw with Burnley. With the pack behind improving, including that lot from up the road, it's time to start turning some of those draws into wins. Today we have a chance to do just that as Watford visit the Amex, and then on Boxing Day we head to Stamford Bridge. Joining me today is, of course, our very own Scrooge in the shape of Alan Wares. And we are delighted to welcome back the Queen of the Pies, Piglet Pantry's Jo Hunter, and putting some fizz into the occasion. We are delighted to welcome the Raw Virgin. It's the CEO of It's the CEO of Sussex's best vineyard. That's Ridgeview, of course. It's Tamara Larder. Welcome to the show. Now, this is a bit of a thrill for me, Tam, because how long have we known each other now? Oh, I'll work this out.
No, please don't. It's going to be horrific.
That's really unfair as well. Like, first thing you do, you introduce her to the show. Welcome to the show, Tam. You introduce her to the show, and the first thing you do is actually hint at her age.
Well, we're both 23, so
and all I can say is this is a fine vintage. Yeah.
We're both 23, so I've known you for about 23 years, is what I'm going to say.
Absolutely. Let's leave it at that.
And welcome, Jo. How are you? Merry Christmas.
Morning. Merry Christmas, everybody.
You raided the gin last night, didn't you?
I had a couple.
It's just a little live. I had to get through the holiday. How's things? How's everything at over in Worthing?
It's pretty hectic at Christmas and New Year. So thousands and thousands of pies going out across not just Sussex but across the country. So we will be feeding you at home and away this week at Chelsea. So there's a special cart going in the away end, Piglet's cart, so we will personally be serving you if you're going away to Chelsea this
fabulous
coming Boxing Day.
And Tam, for you as well, I mean, it's a very, very big, well, every day of the year is a busy time for you, but a particularly busy time at this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, sparkling wine is definitely the thing to have around this time of year, and it really starts building for us from September onwards with the trade, and then retail kicks in December.
Okay, well, we're going to be talking to you about both of the businesses a little bit later on, but Tam, I mean, you're here in the salubrious Radio Reverb studio. Bit different to Downing Street, isn't it?
A little bit different to Downing Street. Yeah, it was that was quite special actually to actually get there. And I've been there a couple of times now, but actually to be the sparkling wine of choice there has been great.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I was about to say the main thing is we've got a black door here. It's just that in here there's fewer pillocks.
Well, this is true. But I went to school with Tam, so we grew up together. But to tell you just how far Tam's gone, she actually got invited back to the school to do a special talk in one of the assemblies the other day. That, for me, is amazing.
Are you looking forward to being invited yourself?
Yeah, I'm really jealous.
What are we talking about? Oatmeads?
Oh, yeah, but you can't call it that anymore, unfortunately, the Burgessill Academy, but it's always Oatmeads in my heart. So,
well, BHA?
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah. But, Tam, you are, like we said, you are a Raw Virgin, so we need to know all about your Albion supporting history.
Oh, crikey, here we go. Well, it actually starts probably by meeting my husband, Simon Larder, who has been a staunch Albion fan. And I think with the birth of our two kids, going back to about 12 years ago now, they've both been season tickets since they're about three, moving on from there. So it's been since then. So I was introduced more to football sort of halfway through my life so far.
So hubby Simon.
Yes.
He's involved with Ridgeview as well, isn't he?
He is, yeah. And we've got, there's five family members now in Ridgeview, and of which, but 26 or nearly 30 employees in all. So
okay, yeah. So and tell us about his, because we did actually invite him and told people, but unfortunately, somewhat worryingly for a drinks producer, he's not well, which is kind of ironic at Christmas, isn't it? But what's his Albion supporting history? Because he said he was the one that introduced you to the Albion.
I mean, I think post university and pre, he was definitely down at the Goldstone. And a little bit at the Withdean. I think he was up in Preston at university, so it was really
Right.
Difficult for him to get to the games, but as soon as he could get the tickets for the Amex, that was it.
What did you guys study? Viniculture?
No, none of us studied anything to do with wine. None of our family had anything to do with wine when we went. All right.
Just a hobby then.
Just a hobby.
Just a hobby. Hobby turned good.
Yeah.
So do you remember your first Albion game?
Do I remember my first Albion game? It probably was. It was definitely at the Amex. And now I'm trying to think who it was, and I'm going to fail miserably. But we were sitting in the East Stand at that point.
Oh, that narrows it down, yeah.
Yeah, there you go, East Stand family. I remember where I was, but I can't remember who it was, okay. So I'm very sorry.
And that's all right. Well, welcome to the Raw Town.
Indeed.
Lovely to have you here.
Thanks. And, you know, nothing says Christmas like Marcus Hancock's in a Christmas jumper. So, Marcus, you're not wearing a Christmas jumper.
Yeah, please don't swear, Marcus, because normally at this point you would, wouldn't you?
No, I wouldn't, actually, because it's a family-friendly radio show. But if we was in the pub... Yes, absolutely.
Then it'll really let rip. Yes.
Okay, well, we do need to go over last week, and we see it as 2 points dropped.
Absolutely,
really.
Yeah. I mean, it's just for the first time in quite a while, we actually battered a side for at least one half. I mean, we should have been out of sight. The penalty was kind of a bonus, it was a clumsy one. Shot cleared off the line, hit the post. It's just one of those days when it ain't happening. Mm. And yet, on another day, if it was last season and we're playing exactly the same side, we'd have been 3-0 up and out of sight. When it's working for you, it's going for you. When it's not, then yeah. And as for Murray, what constellation do you think Murray's penalty is in now?
I think near Earth orbit.
I think it's probably racing Leo Azouas actually to the sun. I think it's probably the.
So we've got a space station of footballs. One's Azouas. So it's. Yeah, he says he slipped. Can you find any evidence of that?
Can I find any evidence of that? Not really. I've watched it a few times. I think his penalty record's not too bad, to be fair. I mean, when we was with Dean...
It was shocking.
It was, wasn't it? And then he put a Palace shirt on and started knocking him home for fun. And then, and thankfully, he carried that over to playing for us. But, you know, Toma Hemmer's missed one, so...
Yes.
Well, two, actually, I think.
He missed two.
It happens.
Like I say, I'm sure you've got the details and the notes there, AD.
Yeah, I do.
Go on then.
But we're back to what is probably our first choice 11 for the game. We're going to go through the not so secret Santa stuff which you've put onto on our Facebook page this week. But someone said toss a coin for Chris Hughton to toss to see who he's playing, Gaetan Bong or Marcus Suttner.
I need to bring in someone at this point because I think that if I talk to Jo about this, I think that she'd have a favourite as to who the left back should be, don't you? Because and it's not necessarily. Tell us, Joe.
No.
Who would you rather see playing at left back?
Suttner.
Okay.
Definitely.
Any reason why not Bong then?
I'm not a favourite. Okay. Not a favourite of mine, I'm afraid.
So the upshot of it is that you prefer Suttner because how can I put this diplomatically? You don't rate Bong.
No. I think when he gets the ball, he can be brilliant. And then other times he just loses it entirely and passes it.
Well, that's what happens when you play for Brighton, full stop.
I know, but yeah.
Have you seen Dale Stevens lately?
No. I get that. But Suttner for me, 100%.
Okay. Okay. Actually, while we're here, Marcus, do you have a preference as to who your left back is?
Funnily enough, I prefer Bong. So there you go.
Oh, there we go.
He's not saying it's awkward.
Yeah, I'm not saying it to be awkward. I just don't rate Suttner for the same reasons.
Go on, Andy, what's yours?
I personally don't think we've seen enough of Suttner to really make an assessment, but on that reason I'm going Bong.
Okay, Tam?
Well, there's a question. I've only ever seen Bong, so I'm going to have to...
So you're going to go for Suttner?
Suttner, probably. Yeah. I'll just Tam balance Bong. It out.
It's always better when they don't play.
I'm going to say that I think Bong plays better against the speedy winger. Whereas if a team's playing a bit more compact, I think
so. Basically, you're saying horses for courses.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, Bong was superb up at West Ham when I think it was Antonio on their right wing was trying to go flying past them, and Bong could keep up. And I think that Izquierdo, who's also fast, helping out as well. So, like I say, it helps when it depends on who you're playing. I think.
But I mean, the other key fact about the team lineups, of course, was the fact that there was four members of our League One winning side on the respective. Benches.
Well, I can think of three. I'm not sure who the fourth one was.
Chris Wood,
Sam Vokes,
Ashley Barnes, and Lewis Dunk.
On the pitch.
I thought you meant
in Burnley's side. No, including Arthur. And Glenn Murray as well.
Yeah.
So that's five.
Well, Sam Vokes didn't play that season, so. It was online like the season afterwards.
I'd rather you just told us rather than left us. Because we've got carnage otherwise. Look, you want to see what's next to me. I'd much rather talk about
maybe
that.
Maybe it'll get better off a glass of fizz.
Maybe it will.
Fizz. Have we got some fizz here, Joe?
Okay, so, I mean, there was... the first half, you, as you correctly said, Al, we were very, very good. And I mean, when we came out of the game, we were all feeling a little bit flat, I think, because we felt that we deserved more out of the game.
And you know full well that Burnley had to improve, because I mean, you're struggling to see them as a top six side. Yeah. Yes, they've done, don't get me wrong, they've done brilliantly to get where they are.
But one player that really impressed me last Saturday was Anthony Knockhart.
He seems to. The thing about Knockhart, one of the things about Knockhart is that, well, not so much last season, but when he was on fire, he was on fire. But there were times when we saw the real petulant, furious, antagonistic Knockhart out there.
French Knockhart.
I was going to say, he's French. He's French. Of course he's going to be tempestuous. He's French.
Welcome to the jingoistic roar here on... yes, we saw an awful lot of petulance. I mean, we saw it up at Wembley. And yes, he can be...
he was our best player at Wembley as well.
He was our best player at Wembley. And yes, when he feels like it, you know, sometimes it's a case of whatever the French for F this is, is he'll just sort of like get the ball. And everyone else, all the rest of his team are going, well, what on earth is he going to do with it next? I know, just leave him to get on with it and we'll guess as to where he's going.
But everything we were creating last Saturday came down the right-hand side. Yes. And there was a fantastic team move... there was a free kick on the right-hand side which was swung in by Knockhart, and it's headed on to Dunk, whose volley cannons off Duffy's backside.
Duffy needs to get out of the way some of our shots. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's brilliant at blocking shots, but please not ours.
I don't think that's the point.
Well, okay, well, I've got a stat for you here. I mean, this is a season stat.
The way you finished in 2017, just the way you've done the rest of the year.
This is actually a season stat.
Go on.
How many times has Glenn Murray been offside this season?
And who I'm amazed is, that you know.
837.
and who is second on the offside list?
On the Albion list. Yeah. The okay, well, Murray, I would I'm going to say 35 times, because it's about three times a game.
He's been offside 18 times this
18
season.
Times, and second would be Dunk.
Shane Duffy. Six.
Yeah, I can well believe that as well.
So... he's actually level with Anthony Knockhart, but yeah.
Actually, Duffy's level with Knockhart. It's just his legs and the rest of him. He's actually offside.
But I mean, it was a good effort. And then it was a fantastic team move that was started by Knockhart and was very nearly finished by Knockhart, but his shot struck the upright.
I thought it was actually a decent save by the keeper until he realised that actually it hit the post. But it's just one of those things that when it's working your way, it's working your way. Mm. It ain't.
Yeah. Basically, that's as simple as that. It's just
frustrating.
It's
true. Yeah. Frustrating games.
Now there was we had three very good penalty shouts in the game. Now, Tam, you watch an awful lot of rugby, and they do tend to they go upstairs for certain decisions, don't they? Where do you stand on VAR in football? Do you think it would benefit, or would you think it would be a hindrance?
I think it slows the game down, so whether that will suit the football scenario, I don't know. With rugby, it's very stop-start anyway, so it leads to that. And actually, the decisions are... It's such a technical game, rugby, that, you know, you need about three people to understand what the rules are, let alone the decision that was made. But with football, it's much more straightforward. And I would hate to see, I think, the flow of the game being interrupted by, you know, that side of things. Goal line technology is there, right? Or issues,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, we have that, yeah. So, but that doesn't... That's just a buzzer on the referee's arm.
But it doesn't... So. It's a difficult call, isn't it? I mean, there are some really terrible decisions made by referees, but how... I don't know how you'd avoid that.
Well, we always say, I mean, that always gives us something to talk about in the pub afterwards.
Absolutely.
There'd be no Albion roar if we didn't.
However, I do think that they're, because the referees are more professional, sometimes they do have to be more accountable, because they've made them professional referees, and in any element of professionalism, there should be an accountability that comes with it. For instance, you know, I'm a professional in my field, AD is a professional in his field, etc., etc. I know they do a lot of this stuff probably behind closed doors, the FA, but there does need to be some sort of visibility around. I would like to see, for instance, when they go for these appeals for these sendings off and stuff like that, I'd like to see why their findings. For example, I'm still angry about Dale Stevens getting sent off at Borough two seasons ago, but I'd like to see the reasons as to why they made that decision, other than, yeah, we backed the referee, when quite clearly...
Well, Marcus, I mean, quite clearly, I mean, we've seen this week, I mean, we talked about Tarkowski, well, we've talked about, yeah. and well, his assault on Glenn Murray. He's had the book thrown at him for that. It went to the beak,
yeah.
and he's now got a free match ban. But I mean, basically, that's fine. It just all that says it's okay to kick someone in the nuts.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, what you've got is, I mean, I take Marcus's point about sort of the notion of professionalism within the referees, but there is probably a finite limit. I don't think you can measure it, but there's a finite limit to which referees, by sight, by approximation, by whatever it might be that you measure these things, there's a limit to which they can actually get a decision right. So if, for instance, we're talking about the Shawcross and Murray incident, if the referee was of the opinion that Shawcross got the ball, then he's of the opinion, there's no amount of training that can actually say you did that. Yes, he missed the fact that he missed the ball. You can train, but the thing is, the professionalism will take you so far in what looks like a dive, what is a dive, you know, the whole thing of bodies coming together, that all the various things about sort of natural movement and what have you. Yes, you can be taught that, but if you genuinely miss an incident, you genuinely miss an incident. Yes, there should be a lot more accountability, and I take your point about, I think that the football itself would be improved for a referee or a referee's organisation explain the decisions they come to,
yeah.
And I think it would actually, I mean, like I say, the whole thing between the difference between what Lukaku did and what Tarkowski did and what Hemed did, you know, in their own way, they could have sort of seriously injured a given player.
Yeah.
But one person gets away with it, two don't, and you realise, I mean, you think, hang on, well, where's the consistency? Okay, where's the reasoning?
Well, I mean, am I wearing blue and white tinted spectacles here, which is not unusual for me, I've been at one though.
Oh, yeah.
But when because I'm still, I keep going back to that Hemed incident, and I can't see what he's actually done.
Well, he has stood on the bloke.
Yeah, but he's trying to get out of the way.
Well, this is the point, is that working on the level of assumption.
At him. He wasn't going like a Joey Barton on...
I think it comes down, Alan's right, but it comes down to the fact that if that's a stamp deemed by the official bodies as a stamp, and obviously sometimes the referee can't see it if it happens at the other end of the pitch, I mean, he's not going to, and I'm not saying the accountability on that. I'm talking about those dodgy decisions like the red card that wasn't Dale Stevens. However, having said that, with regards to the Hemed thing, it's like, well, if that's a stamp as deemed by the officials, then why isn't the Lukaku thing deemed a kick in the, as you say? And also, with regards to Tarkowski, well, if they feel that that's a genuine red should be sent off, fine. So, but where's
the consistency? And is it genuinely a case of one rule for one and one rule for another?
Is it a case of he plays for Man United, so therefore he's immune? Fine, come out and say it.
And you think, are we at home to conspiracy or cock up? No. So, you know.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, Marcus Hancock's sitting on the fence since 1972.
Well, no, it's fair enough. I mean, I'm convinced there is one rule for one and one rule for another. And I think it's been ever thus. And you've got people, even at the top of the game, who are actually supposedly, in inverted commas, control the game, are still star F star star stars because they see a person, you know, football should have these stars playing, and it will suffer if they're wrong and they're kicking someone in the knackers, then they shouldn't be playing. They're dirty, they're cheating, they're violent, and there's no room for it. So it's about the level of consistency.
Okay, well, let's move it on for that. Now the team, they were moving a little bit quicker through the phases, but we're still not moving the ball quick enough, and the midfield definitely it needs to be catching up with the rest of the play. I mean, Dale Stevens was doing my head in because he's very much like,
there's not many things that don't do your head in.
He's like a supermarket trolley, right?
I think Phil Shelley's reaching for his car keys with regards to Dale Stevens, because
with the supermarket trolleys where if you go over the red line the wheel stop.
I know what you're saying.
He's like that. He's gone over the red line.
To be fair, it's the same with Proper as well, and it's evident they've been told to do it. So our creativity comes from the two wide fellas and the two forward players. I wish, yes, that at least one of the midfielders could get up and support them. There is a reason why this isn't happening. I suspect they're actually operating to order. It doesn't seem to work. because I think that Burnley was an exception where we could have actually gone for it a bit better. But I think that, you know, with, when you're playing Man United, and let's face it, we're going back to what we talked about before, Liverpool, they stood there and they picked us off because we had a midfield that was easily bypassed because we'd overcommitted ourselves. There is a fine line to be had between going that far forward and being exposed at the back. At the moment, I'm not convinced that we've actually sort of sorted that out. And so what we're doing is we're setting ourselves up to not concede rather than to overtly score. If we can pick one off at the other end, then great. We are not going to be blessed with fantastic Albion performances this season, and I'm afraid we're just going to have to lump it. If we want Premier League survival this season, it's one of those things. It's kind of like your Faustian pact. If you want to stay in the Premier League, you've got to put up with the fact that we're going to be playing quite conservatively this season, I think.
Okay, well, I think that we need to be playing a little bit more expansively at times. I can understand the reason to be conservative.
Something like today, against Watford, I'd like to think, although Watford are very, very good.
4-4-2.
Well, that's pretty much what we play. It's pretty much what we play, and it's... well, the thing is, I'm just thinking of Watford's violent reputation this season. Is there any guarantee of them finishing with 11 players on the pitch today?
So we get to see Britos again today, I think, so that'd be nice. OK, I've got the constant moaning of Sean Dyche down here, but we'll move on from that.
No, he was just impersonating... was it Christ? No, he was impersonating Christ on the... What's that thing on Sugarloaf Mountain in Rio?
Oh, Christ the Redeemer.
Yes,
yeah.
He was impersonating
that. I mean, Burnley still had chances
Christ
in that
on
game.
The bike, and
Huddersfield... We saw the worst of Matt Ryan against Burnley. We saw the best of Matt Ryan.
Well, another game, another double save. Some of which were off. I mean, some of these double saves he's made are, you know, their players are offside.
Yeah.
But
he's pretty good.
He is pretty good. Mm. And could you confirm to him, I'm sure you must have met him, could you confirm that he's actually bigger than an Oompa Loompa?
Yes, he's not. He's definitely not as tall as Stockdale, that's for sure.
Okay. I mean, the way that she says that with a giggle, I'm not actually sort of cast any aspersions.
Well,
he's not as tall as Stockdale.
I love Stockdale. Okay. I really love Stockdale, and I miss.
Why
I still miss
him.
Then?
Why did
I still miss
Birmingham?
Him, but I have to say, great, you know, great kind
did
of,
you have a
great
bit
choice
of,
from
did
Albion.
Did you have
on
a
the
bit
new...
of a crush on Stockdale?
I did have a little bit of a crush, yeah. It was quite sweet. I quite like Stockdale.
All right, okay, fine. But no, I would say this. One thing I would say about Matty Ryan is he knows how to work a crowd, especially after the game, because, I mean, there's Australian people that come. And there's people from Bruges come in as well, because he was there once upon a time. He knows how to work the PR. You know, and the fact that you actually then go hairing up one end of the pitch when we score a goal, which hasn't happened for a while, has it?
Well, yes, I think he's dying to do that. Actually,
no, I think it's good fit for us.
Absolutely,
a,
no,
a good decision.
Yeah, he made a dropsy against Huddersfield, but let's face it, that's a rarity.
It's a rarity now. I mean, if it was sort of third game into the season, everybody would be howling. Well, they were howling after two games, but you know,
well,
it's
we all
fine,
demand perfection right at the very beginning, don't we? And it doesn't happen that way. So you know, they're human.
Okay, well, Ashley Barnes made an appearance, and he was very keen, wasn't he?
Rolling back the years.
Yeah. I can't remember who it was exactly he bundled into the net, but
it was actually Ryan, wasn't it? And it was a real kind of Nat Lofthouse classic, wasn't it? And it's the girl ball of Barnes in the keeper, all in the net. It's a hat trick.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's nice to see that our players are across various sports, and Shane Duffy decided to roll back the years and go back to his hurling days.
What did he do? Remind me.
His handball.
Yes. I'll tell you what, I reckon what that is, because he was on the bookings, and if he'd have picked up the booking today against Watford, it means he's not playing against Chelsea.
I don't think he was.
What do you reckon it was then? It was just brainless.
Just brainless. Absolutely.
Well, I don't think it was deliberate.
You could see him actually sort of like going for it. Is the bounce going to beat me here? And then he went for it, and the bounce did beat him. He still stuck his hand up in the
air. We all know that Shane Duffy can't think that quickly.
Yeah.
Google can.
Yeah. And boom. And before we move on, we do just have to talk about Jose Izquierdo and his dive.
Do you know what? People are talking about this, and I have absolutely no... I'll take your word for it. I have no recollection of it. So, Marcus, can you talk through it?
I've got no... No.
It's been talked at length on social media and on Match of the Day, actually. And it was just blatant, and it was just...
Was it in the area?
Yeah, last minute.
Did he get a booking?
No.
Oh.
I don't know. You should have done. But
I try not to watch Match of the Day if we're not going to win. I've watched it four times this
exactly,
season.
Exactly, I'm terrible. If we lose or draw, I don't watch it at all.
Okay, but you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on our podcast, and now, of course, we're on Spotify, which is nice. We are brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and we have a beauty this week. So, Sam, if you could just describe this for me.
Oh, God.
Perfect description.
It's like some sort of 1970s wallpaper. Yeah. gone sad, badly wrong. What? Sorry, yeah. Yes.
It's okay, what we've got here is kind of yellow mustard colour with sort of the, I don't know, are they paisley pattern prints from here? I'm looking at a distance from here.
It's kind of, it's not paisley, it's like some kind of abstract.
Yeah, something abstract.
Sort of it looks like Art Deco type.
A really bad Poirot type wallpaper.
Yeah.
With what looks like tyre tracks across the top of the chest in a V form.
Yeah.
Sponsored by.
They're the Puma.
Is that the Puma sign?
Yeah. Oh, right, okay. Sponsored by ARO. Can't see anything on the badge. It might even be a goalkeeper's top. And if it's a regular top, then it's disgusting. So, Adrian, tell us what Uncle Phil has actually given us as a Christmas delight here.
Do you want to have a guess in the year?
The year, I would say that's probably mid to late 90s, given the revolting pattern.
You're right. It goes, you're right, Phil says, here is your shirt then. I've tried to outdo myself with this one.
Oh, he's done that. That's saying something.
This is the 95-96 away shirt of a German Zwei Bundesliga side, Nürnberg.
Okay.
Known as Der Club, the club, or the Ruhmreich, which is translated as the glorious. They were formed in 1900 and play at the 50,000 capacity Max Morlock Stadion in Nuremberg. The stadium was built in 1928 and had a number of monikers over the years. In 2006, the stadium was renamed the Easy Credit Stadion after a sponsorship deal with a German bank, the DZ Bank. Members of the Nuremberg Ultras recently held a demonstration against the name and renamed the stadium the Max Morlock Stadion in honour of one of their best players in the club's history, Max Morlock. There you go. So thanks for that, Phil.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wow. So, there is something to be said about mid-90s shirts. For the most part, absolutely disgusting. Absolutely revolting. I mean, it's...
But, of course, you can go onto Phil's website, oldfootballshirts.com, and you can have a look at this. And Phil will be putting up on all our Facebook
pages. Sam is just still staring at it, giggling.
Taking me back to my parents' house in 1970s.
It's not a magic eye picture.
No.
Are you thinking of looking at the pattern and maybe putting that one or two of your labels?
Well, there we go. There's a thought. Jeez.
Okay, but we're delighted to have Joe Hunter. I was going to call you Philip. So. But Tamara Larder from Ridgeview. Now, Ridgeview, it's a massive success story. The story that started back only as far back as 1995.
Oh, do tell.
1995. So, yes, first grapes, first vines planted in 1995.
Where?
In Ditchling, the site, our main site where the winery is now. It was really my parents who instigated all of this. My brother and I were still out studying, doing other bits and pieces, so none of us have any background in wine or wine making,
because sparkling wine production in the UK at the time was largely unheard of, wasn't it?
There was hardly anything happening, and it particularly focusing any wineries just focusing on making sparkling wine was almost non-existent at the time. And actually it was the varieties that we were growing which was the big change. So actually planting Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, which are the classic champagne varieties.
This is your dad, Michael Roberts, of course. So, I mean, what actually inspired him to actually start this up?
It's a good question, which we ask ourselves time and time again.
He wanted to get drunk.
A love of the Champagne region would be one of them, a love of the wine from there. And I think actually a commercial sense, actually, that really the southeast of England particularly is about the only place that can compete with the Champagne region in terms of climate style.
It's very
and
similar, isn't it?
Value in the soil as well.
That's right,
it?
Yeah. And if you've been to Reims and to Epinay in France, then you'll see the similarities between the geology of the sites.
Yes,
it's quite astonishing.
Reims is like Brighton to Epinay with Lewis. I mean, they're I think a bit further apart, but you can see that they are the two centres.
Absolutely.
I love Epinay. You've got Avenue de Champagne, and you've got all the some of the major wine houses. But what made you think in the mid-90s, you think, okay, I mean, was it a hobby, or was it something that he set up and said, right, I want to compete with the champagne houses?
Yeah, I mean, the he set his stall out. We set our stall up very early in terms of where we expected to be quality wise, and our quality, and it was going to be at the champagne level. Mm-hmm. That was the where we from the fundamental part of the business plan. But at the time when we first started, it was the plantings that we had would give us between 20,000 and 30,000 bottles per annum, enough to sell mainly from the cellar door, so from the winery, as well as a little bit of trade. So it was a cautious, but you know, fairly you know, still a sizable start into the leap into the unknown.
How much practice did it take for you to get the taste right with all the various blends of the grapes?
Well, the first wines we released won the national awards straight up, so not too long.
But I mean, but Tam, as well as trying to produce a fantastic product, you also had to. You're also battling against the perception that British wine isn't actually very good.
It's actually better than drain.
Yeah. Cleaner. So basically, for the first 10 years of selling wines, we would try as much as we could not to tell people it was English wines. We would do blind tastings. We would taste only against champagnes, blind.
Blind drunk.
Yeah. And you know, basically, take away the subjective nature of tasting, which is you look at a bottle and it doesn't say champagne on it, it's going to be
I'm looking at
good.
A bottle right now. So what have you brought in for us today?
So today we've got two of our we make five stand you know wines as standard, and these are two of them. The one we've got with the Blanc de Noir, which is one of our premium wines, premium edition wines.
I've got to ask this. When it says Blanc de Noir, I mean that's white of black. What's white? What's black?
So, so two of the varieties grown for Champagne are black. So Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier, both red skin grapes.
Oh, okay.
And Chardonnay, obviously, being white. So, but when you press for this particular style of wine, for traditional method sparkling, you press very, very gently, so you have no skin contact. It's the skin that actually gives the colour.
Oh, right.
But it's actually your brother Simon who actually makes the wine.
That's right. Yeah, winemaker. Yeah. So, and again, came from a boat building or a boat design background into winemaking. So he's learnt an awful lot in those first 10 years, really.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's right. Incredible. I'm loving the fact that actually in your first season, so what we're talking, you fired up in 95, where your first vines were grown in 95.
Yeah.
How old are the grapes before you actually harvest them?
3 years. 3 years before you start to harvest.
Right.
So first vintage was really 98.
Uh-huh.
And then you wouldn't sell that for a couple of years. So.
All right, but so you basically nailed it first time.
Yeah, we launched them in 2000.
Well, I think we should try some.
Well, all in good time. All in just calm down.
We need something
you.
To go.
It's gone midday now. He's gone.
Yeah. Okay, but the thing is, we've got another one here. We've got the Fitzrosé.
Yeah, I bought a rosé. One of our rosés. We introduced that quite early on as a part of our portfolio, and it's a very popular wine. And very sort of a nice light style rosé, which goes with a lot of things. So they're quite different in their flavour profiles.
I don't know if it matters or not, but I'm just looking at the bottles here, and they don't have years on. Does that actually matter?
Yeah. So on the Blanc de Noir on the neck label, there's 2013.
So it is. Yeah.
And
also
on the
big label,
rosé,
sorry.
It's a non-vintage, so it's a mix of vintages.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But Joe, also it's a similar story with you, though, isn't it? I mean, you're another one who's come from the humble beginnings, and you've just grown and grown.
Yeah, the original pies for Albion were born out of my kitchen at home. I have got a catering background, but not one mass producing or manufacturing on the scale that we're doing today. So my whole family very similarly really have had to learn a lot about how to make our products brilliant en masse, and that's taken the best part of 6 years for us too.
So where do you think you'd actually be now if you hadn't actually got that Amex contract?
That's such a difficult question. I don't think about it. It's just.
It's actually, yeah. I mean, it's a fair
it's
point.
One of those,
don't think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, you don't think about it. You're thankful for what you've got, but you don't expect the scale of which we've grown and the speed of which we've grown. You just don't expect that to happen. And every day is another sort of challenge. Really, it's you know, learning how to kind of get to the next stage and making it work. And so no, you don't think about it.
And how is your attempt at global domination going now? Then
it's going well. We're just but the best Christmas ever. I mean, we've tripled our production from this time last year, to answer your question. So there are there's a lot more products going out to a lot more places, clubs, race courses.
Are you in a position to name how many football clubs you actually provide to now?
Yes, we provide to 8 of the clubs in the UK. We also, you know, everything from Bristol Rovers and Principality and some of the stadiums down in Wales to Chelsea, where you will all be going next week. We will be there in earnest to look after you all.
Excellent.
To Leicester. Leicester's obviously a new club, which was an interesting one that we won last year.
But that was
West Brom as well.
We played with Leicester this season. I'm sure.
Yeah, we were there.
Yeah,
yeah, they were. Yeah, people were ringing me up, going, "Somebody's selling your pie." No. We are at Leicester. It's all good. It's all good.
Okay, yeah, we're up at West Brom.
We do. Yeah, we're at West Brom. And so, interestingly, for all the clubs, we have
hospitality, though, isn't it, or is it on retail?
A bit of both now. They have their own twists on it. So you may have, if you've gone to Leicester, you had a red Leicester sausage roll, you'd have had a butter chicken with Singer beer, which
what's
is
West
quite,
Bromwich
which
famous
is unique
for, then?
To them. So West Brom do their own twist every game. Yeah. So they have something.
I've got that written down. Have you actually noticed regional trends to what flavours are popular?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. The each area has its own twist. So Chelsea, minced beef and mushy peas is a favourite.
Chelsea.
That's one of their favourite pies. So they do
always
have,
knew they were sophisticated.
They have a steak, Stilton and celery in the kind of hospitality, which is a nod to their kind of celery bit, which I didn't know about until I started working with them. So
because you used to throw celery around at half time.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
We used to do that as well, and it actually got banned because it was an offensive weapon.
Yeah, this is true. You two think we're joking. Yeah. It's absolutely true.
Fair enough, so they all have their own
and looking to expand, and you're doing cricket grounds and you're doing rugby grounds and horse race tracks.
It's all over now. We won Ascot, we're now supplying Ascot. That was last month.
Okay, so what did Her Majesty make of that?
Sorry.
What did Her Majesty make of that?
I don't know, we'll find out.
But Tam, again, you're in various salubrious places as well, aren't you? We've already mentioned Downing Street. I mean,
that's not salubrious.
your wine solar served in Buck House as well, isn't it?
Well, we've been fortunate to be selected for I think three of the when she does her the visits,
state visits,
there we go, crikey,
state
banquets.
She hasn't even opened the champagne.
I know,
it's been a long Christmas.
It has been a long Christmas. So three state banquets, including with President Obama, and also also when the Chinese president came over as well. So if your wines are good and they're selected in certain areas, you have that chance.
And sold in various supermarkets up and down the country now as well. Waitrose.
Only the best, Waitrose. M&S.
So tell us about, in all this time now, tell us since in the 20 years since the first vineyards were grown, what awards have you won? I mean, we're talking global awards here, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean,
don't be so modest, be so humble.
Over 250 or 60 medals for the wines, and that and then sort of in terms of we've won, you know, at least two or three times the sparkling wine of a particular competition, such as Decanter or International Wine Challenge, International Wine and Spirits competitions. We also enter wines into competitions in America because we have quite a lot of export market out there at the moment. So there's a big competition over there called Texon, which we've won quite a few gold medals in when we first entered last year. So yeah, we score well.
So is it in doing what you guys are doing, and obviously probably some other vineyards across Sussex and Kent and Hampshire as well, but is it you guys that have now turned the corner in actually a more international appreciation for English wines?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Are they better recognised now?
Better recognised, they're sought after, and in fact, to be fair, the industry's maintained a position of... demand outstripping supply for a long time, which is quite phenomenal, really, when you think about it. I mean, internationally now, pretty much. Nationally, it'd be very strange to go into, particularly in London in the southeast, and not find an English wine of some sort on a good restaurant or a good pub list.
Because I mean, you have people like Michelle Rue and stuff come to the vineyard and
you're such a name dropper.
Well, it's called research, Alan.
Ouch.
Well, AD Packham's been there. Oh, there you go, drop that name.
No.
I haven't.
Not AD, that's outrageous. Well,
even I have. I remember picking up a 2001 vintage and it was actually probably the best champagne I've ever had. There's none of it left now.
It wasn't champagne, Alan, it was sparkling wine.
All right, sparkling wine, but actually, well, it's beaten champagne. So you got the original vineyard at Ditchling. I remember at the time talking to whoever it was that I was talking to at the factory gate saying we're about to grow some new ones in Plumpton. So how many fields have you got? How many vineyards have you got now?
So in all, we've got probably about 150 or about 160 acres planted that come to Ridgeview for our own production. But on top of that, there's probably another getting close to 80 acres, which we make pure contract for other people. For example, one of our customers has planted vines on Great Winter Park, which is leased from the Queen, so it goes under the Great Winter Vineyard name. And also Waitrose have a vineyard in their farm at Leckford down in Hampshire, which again come to us for vintage.
So how many bottles can you? But you said you started off with 20,000-30,000. Yeah. How many can you produce now?
We're around about 300,000, including the contract.
That's a heavy night in the pub, isn't it?
I think with our new growers coming on in the next 5 years, we'll be getting towards 500,000 by 2020.
Because Ham, you have one of the worst things possible in your hand at the moment. You have an unopened.
I know. I was just waiting for the.
Would you do us the honour?
I'm
please?
Doing it now. That's absolutely fine.
He's just been chatting.
10 minutes after I said it.
There we go.
Okay, and could you actually give us an idea as to how to correctly pour this?
Oh gosh, oh, there's a million different ways of pouring. But
okay, I'm just going to say that you know there's the dent in the bottle. Tam has got it's like kind of thumb in the dent at the bottle there, so he's holding the bottle that way rather than holding. There's a reason for
that. The reason for that is because the bottle's really sippy because it's got so much condensation on it because it's been out the fridge for a bit. But it is away. So what we tend to do is just go through, fill a little bit in every glass.
Yes.
Let the foam go down and then refill. One of my big handy hints to anybody drinking any sparkling wine is don't fill the glasses too high, just keep topping them up, otherwise they'll start to get a bit warm, fizz starts to disappear obviously, so just keep refreshing them as you go.
Okay, so Joe, we've got you in here, which in your mind have you had a little sampler on top of the gin last night and this morning? So cheers. Merry Christmas to everyone.
Merry Christmas. This is a good start to Christmas.
We've been told specifically by Radio Reverb, don't make your shows Christmas specific, so tough.
So Joe, you're also an award winner.
Multi-award winner.
Yes.
What have you brought with us today that goes with this wonderful Blanc de Noir?
So we had a chat earlier in the week tomorrow night, and I've brought some of our turkey dinner specials that will be on sale today.
And what's in them?
So you've got a lovely turkey with some nice fresh vegetables in its own gravy with some cranberry sauce under the lid. And on top of the lid, we've got a little, these are for hospitality, the ones I brought in today, but they've got a little stuffing mix crumb just to finish them off. And I think we agreed that probably...
Marcus is staring at these lovingly.
Yeah, I know. Well,
actually, you haven't taken your eyes off them, Sunshine. So you
want to cut... The ones
Marcus,
in the
could you do the honours,
the
mate?
Ones in the middle, Marcus.
Yes.
Right, this one, yeah.
Marcus Hancock's after a glass of champagne with a knife.
Not
what could possibly go wrong?
What
the pies.
Oh, right, the pie.
Yes, okay. You know, you're not going to stuff the whole thing in your face in one go, mate.
No.
Oh, I would.
I know you would. But okay, what else, apart from the turkey, what else have you brought with you?
So we've brought today a range of products we're working on this week. So on the left there you have venison slowly cooked in red wine, bacon and onions. And that's topped with a homemade...
Especially for you, Andy Bass.
Homemade sweet potato. Homemade sweet potato mash with a little bit of cumin in it.
Lovely.
And you also have some cheeky beef pies, which
cheeky
is...
Cheeky beef? Why is it cheeky? Is it cow that answers back?
It's called cheeky beef because that's the menu description of the chef. wow. He likes to call it cheeky beef. And I've told you that's the one in the middle, actually, that you were cutting originally. The ones you've just cut there are the turkey. The cheeky beef is slow cooked for 24 hours and is
slow.
Is then sort of... put into its own juices, so we have our own recipe for that, and it's slowly cooked, and then we make that into a gravy, and is what it is, really. It's called cheeky beef.
Is that the one with what looks like the custard whirl on the top?
No, that's the sweet potato one.
Right, who's going to go? Tam, do you want to go first? Do you want to leap across and help yourself?
And then, of course, we bought our just for you, Al. Obviously, we've bought our sausage roll wreath.
It's a wreath.
Minus the cranberry, because I know you don't
do
cranberry.
Like it. Can't have
don't
it.
Do cranberry.
Can't have it.
So it's a sausage roll wreath, which is pretty special.
Well,
too.
For those that listened to the first show of the season, when we had Bob Booker and Kieran Maguire and Malcolm Stewart and other Chimps Tea Party guests in the studio, Joe brought it. I can't remember. Were you there, Marcus? She brought in an 18-inch long sausage roll, and I think that's largely what we've got here, but all formed into a ring. Is that basically it?
So basically, these are all handmade, and so we weigh out the sausage meat.
Yeah.
We soak it in port, and then we roll that out, and we hand make it into a wreath, and then it's hand finished with its own pastry bow.
Yeah.
Then you cut all the little pieces you can see to make it look like a wreath.
Yeah.
It's really glazed really well twice, and then it's finished with a dusting of rosemary. On the top.
I've got a feeling that history is about to repeat itself, because if
Mark
I can
Johnson's just walked in.
Yeah, please no talking with your mouth full. So we've got to rewind about 4 or 5 years. Mark Johnson, who's next up on Reverb with Slipstream Worldwide Beats, he came by one time while we were having another What Pie Goes With What Wine, and he helped himself and was unable to function the rest of the day. Mark, welcome to the studio, mate. Would you like some pie and some wine? Because
I'll have some pie, yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, the sausage roll apparently is sausage meat drowned in port.
Okay.
So.
Right. Moving on. Earlier this week,
we posted... talk football.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Football show. Earlier this week, Al Park posted on our Facebook page, where we were asking for your memories of your favourite Christmas games. Which, basically, I'm not going to lie, the whole thread got taken over by one person, Marcus Hancock.
Marcus. Are you
what?
The mark.
I was looking at the food.
It's becoming more and more wise.
So Marcus, we were talking about the Christmas games. You took over the whole thread with
Did I? Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. What, the Boxing Day games?
Yeah.
Ah, right. Okay. The first one? Yeah. Okay. Fine. 1988. December 1988. A great year for the Albion. Crystal Palace were chasing automatic promotion. Brighton right up. Fun for them. Mm-hmm. And they come to the Goldstone Ground. We're still struggling against relegation. And we smashed them 3-1. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Any smashing of them is brilliant.
But especially on Boxing Day. And
because
of Boxing Day. And I think that was the last Boxing Day encounter that we've actually played against Palace since, from memory. So certainly that was one of my favourite of all time Boxing Day memories. But the other one, which always makes me chuckle, and was mentioned on a Facebook thread, was the 1-0 against Bristol Rovers. And it was absolutely chucking it down. I'm surprised the game went ahead. I mean, it was puddles, it was wet.
Are we talking with Dane
here? No, we're talking at the Goldstone. This was in 1990. And they had the carol singers at half time, and I remember the North Stand saying along the lines of, you know, stop, and not because they were particularly awful, but because it was absolutely chucking down, and they were down by the southwest corner, and you could just see these kids of about 8 years old just getting wet, and everybody's sort of just saying, you know, stop, and of course Bristol Rovers had the legendary strike force that was Carl Saunders and Devon White, and I remember the North Stand singing Billy Ocean songs to Carl Saunders because he doesn't look like Billy Ocean.
Right. I'm not sorry.
Well, Max we lost 1-0.
Max Cooter mentioned this game as well. He said that it looked more like water polo than football.
Actually, when I said, oh yes, the one I was thinking of, and I think it was a Boxing Day game, was they had a solo carol singer at the Goldstone, and she was sort of like one of those horrific, really bad cabaret pub singers. And with that, the North Stand joined me with. it was awful.
But Gavin,
I can't remember what game it was.
Gavin Shepherd remembers a goalless draw against Orient at home with them. Not one shot on target. My family hated me.
Got a happy soul, isn't he? Yeah. Happy Christmas to him too.
Steve Agass, I was staying with my now in-laws for the first Christmas together up in London. I noticed that we had Millwall away, so we decided to go. My father-in-law isn't really a football fan, but insisted he would join me. Luckily, he seemed quite oblivious to the goading the Millwall fans gave us throughout the game. Moya Jackson, hello Moya. 1978 beating Cardiff 5-0 at the Goldstone with Teddy Maybank getting a hat trick.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Hancock, so again.
Sorry.
Marcus Hancock, again. QPR with Dean in 2005, Guy Butters scored. That was the game when Charlie Oakway broke his leg.
That's right. That was also the game that Charlie Oakway broke his leg as well.
Sorry, this cheeky beef is wonderful.
Thank you, Ben.
Which one is cheeky beef?
That's the one with
you've got venison there. That's venison.
What's this one?
Hang on. What have I got?
You've got venison. That's venison with sweet potato mash.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much.
That's really lovely.
Well, if you know enough people at QPR, Mark. Joe wants to get in there as well. She wants to have world domination of all football grounds.
It's more a case of wherever we go, then that you'll be fed well. That's the most important thing.
Surely,
you've got to be fed well.
But yeah, so I've got. I can't remember what the game was. It was a game at the Goldstone. It was Boxing Day. I can't remember how I got there. But I was still living in Burgess Hill at the time, and I was.
You can't remember how you got there.
I think I got a lift up there, but I couldn't get back, and I ended up walking home to Burgess Hill.
You silly boy. Yeah,
wow. From the Goldstone.
Quite impressive.
Well done.
He was young then. He was cute.
He was young, yeah.
I was young and stupid. Now I'm just old and stupid. But older.
Hashtag saying
older.
Nothing.
Okay, well, we've got the window opening up very, very shortly.
Which we're about to fall through. We've got too much more of this blanc de noir.
But what do we need? And
striker. Just a
striker. How many players do you think we need, Marcus?
We're munching out. Joe, you know these things
better
than
everyone
else.
We definitely need a striker. Yeah. I'm with Alan, definitely.
And you've got a left back.
I think the passes. oh no, I just that's very unfair of you. I think the passes are going in, and we just need some more people to finish on the end, and it would be good to have someone with pace up front finishing those passes, those beautiful passes we get coming in into the box, really.
Mm-hmm. Have I just eaten a cranberry one there? I'm not eating.
Ask first.
Why?
Those are mincemeat sausage rolls, which we were going to have with the rosé. Yeah, you're a little bit ahead of yourself, boys, over there.
Sorry. Well, Tam isn't pouring fast enough.
But
they're so demanding, honestly. Welcome to the Albion Raw show.
And I can still
welcome to the Albion Raw show. They have got some Albion cabinets.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's descending into chaos.
What do you mean descending?
Well, this is true. But obviously, we all know we need that striker. We needed that before the window closed the last time around. We were looking at a possible loan signing, but with Tim Krul signing permanently, that gives us an option to get another loan player in, possibly.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I mean, I'm not sure necessarily the loan signing is what we're after. We've got loan signings in, and there would be a reason why we would specifically want to get a player that's ours in. It's because they tick the boxes. They would tick the boxes more than probably a lone player would. I don't have too many problems with Brown. Sometimes flats are deceived, but can do a job. But if you've got someone who is yours, I mean, I don't know if they're going to be chasing the fellow that we tried to get from, was it La Coruña? Was it Bilbao?
Somewhere in Spain, wasn't it? In northern Spain, was it?
Somewhere in northern Spain. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they're chasing. I mean, it was just sounded like it was unlucky that we didn't get him.
Yeah, it's because they didn't get their player or something.
That kind of thing, or they had an injured player.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not for the want of trying. And you know, the club came in for, in my opinion, an awful lot of unwarranted criticism. You know, we had, I mean, one bloke, sort of, his heart was about to explode. And the other
I was about to mention Rafael the Mainer. He's back playing again now. Could we go back in for him?
We could, but the point is it depends whether Zurich have actually sort of taken the appropriate steps to actually satisfy the Albion's medical concerns.
Depends if he's scored or not since.
Well, there's that as well. And that as well, yes. How was I being sensible and caring and charitable? As you go, as he scores 20 goals for us and drops dead, I don't care.
but is anyone particularly vulnerable to go?
Oh,
Scalak, Murphy.
I'm not sure Murphy is, actually. I think
it depends if we get another winger in. But.
Yeah, I mean, we've got plenty of wide players. I'm struggling to see Scalak's playing another game for us in the Premier League. I mean, if we get relegated, then,
that's true.
It's that kind of thing. It's the club has to look sort of not just at this season. Yes, obviously, the plan is to stay in the Premier League forever, but, you know, it's for the best laid plans, blah, blah, blah.
Well, Scalak hasn't actually been in the match they scored this season.
That's what I'm saying, but if we got relegated to the Championship and he's still under contract, then he's someone that we don't actually then you know, because
because knockout would probably go
that kind of thing. I mean, you're losing an awful lot of quality if you do that.
Marks,
but you know,
probably go
that sort of thing. So
I mean,
listen, what we don't know is who the club have got their eye on. Well, we can have this thing as an agent from the selling club might blab, but what you've got is you don't know what's going to occur, and they could actually surprise everyone with an absolute doozy of a marquee signing on January the 1st, and we're 8-4 away. So,
I mean, this fella from Celtic, for example, they keep talking about. I'm not convinced, not because he plays for Celtic or anything like that, but Albion never have announced really their transfer business so early. And the fact that this has been doing the rounds since sort of late November, early December.
Well, that's usually a gobby agent, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that might be a bit of a red herring, but.
The point is, AD, we don't know. I mean, Joe probably spends more of her time sniffing around the club. I mean, have you seen any strikers turn up?
Sniffing around.
Funnily enough, I don't have the ear of the club where these things are concerned, believe it or not. I know you think I do, but I don't. No. The only thing I have near to the club is with regards to the food and what might be served and what we might be
doing.
Which
reminds me, the sausage rolls, which incidentally are to die for, really should be sold. Not just, I don't know what the people in the North Stand have done to deserve them, but the people in the West Stand Upper should have these as well. So if anyone from the Caseras is listening, then West Stand Upper, we want these good sausage rolls.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
We want them. You can get them in Dick's Bar, you can get them in the North Stand, you can't get them amongst us sort of superheroes.
You've always been naughty, Al.
Okay.
you haven't been good this Christmas, yeah?
Right, so another question we put out there this week is, we've asked you for your secret Santa ideas for the current squad, and you've answered back in your droves.
Sorry, I know we're short of time here. There's one which actually was my favourite. I can't remember who wrote it. Was some decaffeinated coffee for Chris Hughton. I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
But we've got Janice Gibbs. She's saying a pair of non-slip boots for Glenn Murray. A pair of boxing gloves for Chris Hughton so he can punch all the whingers in the gob.
Charming.
A stepladder for Matt Ryan, says Warren Hatter. Louise Sullivan says Bruno hair. Come on, Lou.
No, he's got hair.
Accurate passing boots for Dale Stevens, says Moya Jackson. Oh. A button. Some bloke called Marcus Hancock. he says a button for Chris Hughton so he can release the handbrake.
Very good. Yeah.
Yes.
A dummy for knockout. GPS so the players can find their way to goal. Phil Shelley, a striker for them all to play with. Jason Thackeray, a coin for Bong and Sutton to share so they can flip to see who's playing that week.
Yeah.
A wheelchair for Sam Baldock.
He's not injured though, is he? He's not injured.
Well, officially, no, because
he was in the squad the other day against Huddersfield.
Steve Agass says some fairy lights to put around the goal so Lewis Bunk knows which one to score in.
That was funny.
Chris Geddes says I'd buy Izzy Brown some energy drinks to get his lazy ass into gear. Ian Sexton some shooting boots.
Yeah, really harsh.
So there we go. So that is pretty much it for this week. And so
we are back next week with our review of 2017, which
Marcus isn't on.
I'm in Newcastle.
Oh, I'm going to make.
Sorry, I'm a fan.
I'm going to make. I think aren't you going to get? I think Paul Barber's buying you a pie and a pint while you're up there.
So he damn well should.
Absolutely. No, I think that. Well, next week we're going to do a review of 2017, and I'm going to make a pitch for 2017 being the best calendar year for the Albion ever. We'll have a good old debate about that. And we'll like I say, look back on the year. And in the meantime, I know we're not supposed to on Radio Reverb, but thank you very much indeed for listening. Merry Christmas. Have a good time.
Indeed.
If we're talking stuffing, try not to make sure that happens at Chelsea. and we'll see you in that.
So thanks for that again. Thank you to Alan West. Thank you to Marcus Hancock. Thank you to Tamara Larder. Thank you to Joe Hunter.
Thank you. Just wanted to say a very Merry Christmas to all the Albion fans. Yeah. I hope you have a fantastic time and an amazing new year.
Thank you. And we'll for myself now, a very Merry Christmas, and to everyone, including lot from up the road. See you next week. Bye.
Hey, jingity jing, it's Dominic the donkey. Jingity jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La 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 la. la 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 dio da. Santa's got a little friend, his name is Dominic, the cutest little donkey, you never see him kick. When Santa visits his paisans with Dominic, he'll be, because the reindeer cannot climb the hills of Italy. Hey, jingity jing, it's Dominic the donkey, jingity jing, the Italian Christmas donkey.